Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Nice pass to the middle, scores! Quinn to Thompson, and he hammers it to the back of the net. He'll carry it to the right side of the ice and drop it back to the line. Here's a pass across, tic-tac-toe, scores! Tage Thompson finishes that little game of tic-tac-toe in second of the game. Power leaves it, but Turk has got a lane, scores! What a dart! Thompson moving the net. He's got two. Scores! Three! Hat trick for Tage Thompson. Let it rain. His seventh hat trick of his career. Middle take it away and the puck. JJ Paterka right down the middle. Scores! That was magic from JJ Paterka. 76-77 get on a run. Speaking of which, an empty net and he's put that one in. And JJ Paterka putting that one in the net. His first career hat trick. Sabres working across to the far circle for shots. Benson Park, where he always is. A 7-2 win over the Bruins.
Good night for the Sabres store. They sold more hats after a game than on any night this year, and for good reason. Two tricks and a demolition of the Boston Bruins last night. Things we don't say often enough around here. However, 20-0. Are the Sabres all time against Boston when they put up 7 or more. So they kept their perfection intact when scoring 7 or more against the Bees. And Jeremy Swayman last night.
His first loss, right?
You were muted, so I missed you.
No, I wasn't muted. I was just listening to your intro. I was great.
Well, I didn't hear your response, so please.
Oh, and 1-0 when we have hot dogs, Razors bringing us hot dogs on the 300 level before the game in the pregame. That was what I was more excited about because my hot dog was fantastic and it set the tone. It put a smile on my face. I wanted to tell all the fans leaving the game on the 300 level that still had a hat on to there was 2 hat tricks. There was no reasons to still be wearing a hat, but I understand that we're on the 300 level, and that hat may not make it to the ice, right? So I'll give him the pass that if you throw the hat, somebody down low's got to throw it in.
Exactly. If it landed in your lap from above, what are you going to do? Keep it? No. You're going to chuck it on the ice, like seriously.
Yes, you should, but maybe you're like, it's going to take too long. That person's not going to do it. But anyway, two hat tricks. It was great to see. Tage Thompson, I felt, was the weird thing about Thompson's goals is one is with Cousins on the ice because there was a change in Kulia change, and one was Urie change, and then one was with McLeod on the ice, and one was him on the rush kind of doing it on himself. So you're thinking, like, the Sabres were able to create offense while different personnel was on the ice. It wasn't always like a line and a line and a line. It was a mix and match at times that worked out well for them.
So what do you make of it, given that you have two players on the same line with hat tricks? Obviously, from Tage's standpoint, the goal scoring's been a little more consistent. Not so much for JJ, but the points are still there. And what do you mean? What do you think it all means moving forward here on this homestand? Nashville here Friday, Jersey on Sunday, Columbus next Tuesday. And I mean, really, I think at this point in time, until something changes dramatically, you do have to just try to take some of the individual upticks and build upon them to create a better potential result for the team. And
yes,
that's what we're talking. So, who's the biggest story emerging from last night? Is it Paterka? Because he scored and maybe more reminiscent of his 28-goal year last year. Is it Thompson? Because he's put himself in a position to chase down 40, which, however you want to, you know, look at things, like, the more you do that, the more respect and everything you garner around the league, right? Like, not
yes,
that Tage doesn't have it. Obviously, he does. But you know what I'm saying? Like, just keep knocking down milestones so you have an internal belief that you are one of the game's dominant scorers. And or is it the kid in the middle in all this, in Urie Kulik?
Urie is definitely a big part of what has been happening. But I'm going to look to I'm going to look to JJ Paterka, because it hasn't been easy to score for JJ Paterka this year. He's had opportunities. He's been trying to get the one-timer on the power play, and it's not like Tage's one-timer. It's not even Yuri's one-timer on the right side. Like, it's just different, right? So him getting the three goals, I think, will do wonder. I think Tage was on his way to potentially get to 40. I mean, it's still 32 games left, and he still has got to score 15 more goals. So he's got to click in at a half a goal a game pace, like a 40-goal pace, like he has so far. But I want to say that Tage was probably looking like the offense and the goal scoring was coming back, where Paterka was more the playmaking. And now Paterka's got three goals. You're thinking, okay, continue to provide goals, right? Not just the playmaking, not just the I'm trying to work on my overall game. No, get the puck to the back of the net. And him getting the three goals was huge. But also, like, my way to look at the way I would build a team was, I want two scoring line. I want a line that can play well defensively, that can shut down the other team. And I want a fourth line that will bring energy. And that's, you know, how I would try to build it. I think teams all do different things. But what I saw last night, and I didn't even talk about it in the post game, was I really appreciated the work that Cousins, Zucker, and Tuck did against the Pasternak line. Like, they were on the ice 5-on-5 against the Pasternak line for almost 10 minutes of the game, right? Like, I mean, that is the matchup that Lindy wanted to have. And I felt like they really did a good job against that line, Geeky, Zacha, Pasternak, that had been so hot of late. So, yeah, I would like to have another line that could score. And is that going to be McLeod with Quinn, and now Krebs was on that line, Benson used to be on that line? I don't know that that line is going to give you the consistent scoring, but top line has been scoring, and I like the defensive side of the game of the Cousins line that shut down the Pasternak line yesterday.
Well, it has to score, though, right?
It, like, has to score, yes, 100%.
So, okay, so back to Paterka for a second. Why does it seem like, here, let's put it this way. JJ scored 28 last year. Pretty common, natural, acceptable if he scores 20 this year, while roaring past last year's point total to establish a new career high in points.
Yeah.
why does it feel like the optics are going to be so bad if he drops from 28 goals down to 20? Like, who cares? Like, there's an 8-goal difference in every star, and I'm not a star player, but you know what I mean? Like, if he increases his production, but the goals go lower, like, what is everybody disappointed with or upset with? And it, and or is JJ just a victim of circumstance here because the team isn't winning?
Well, it's some of that. Obviously, a victim of circumstances. But also, when JJ Paterka was playing away from Tage Thompson, we did not see the same impact, right, that JJ can have in the game. So now
why is that?
Is it the chemistry? Like, we saw it 2 years ago with Quinn and Paterka.
Huh? Does it go back to Cousins down year?
Probably. Oh, yeah, I think that is definitely. But now you see that JJ playing with Thompson, while Thompson was a center, had a bigger impact on games. And now Thompson on the wing with Yuri, but it's still the chemistry of JJ and Tage and their impact on games. Like, it really has done a world of difference having Jason Zucker being sick, and all of a sudden, let's put JJ Paterka on the top line. And what JJ has done is 7 points in 4 games. 4 of those are goals, right? Like, you're like, oh, like, that is the impact that you want to see JJ Paterka. You look, he's not going to get 7 points in 4 games all the time, but that is the difference now. Playing with Thompson, how it fits his game better. It fits the way that he plays better. And it could be Dylan Cousins down year that kind of held JJ Paterka back. But I think Lindy Ruff has tried JJ in a few different situations with different personnel. It still works best when it's with Tage Thompson.
Well, last night, dueling hat tricks, incredibly 13th time in Sabres regular season history that it has happened. We hadn't seen it since 2008. We have seen it once in playoff history. That was a fond memory in game 2 of 2006 against the Philadelphia Flyers.
That was fun.
8-2 drubbing. Unfortunately, a gentleman by the name of Peter Forsberg decided to elevate his game right after that and promptly took the next 2 games for Philadelphia. And all of a sudden, the series was even at 2 games apiece before Buffalo would roll on 3-0 and 7-1. But yeah, back in the day, it was JP and JP. It was JP Dumont with a trick and Jason Pominville with a trick in that same game 2 win against the Flyers.
Yeah, and that was a big game for us, being able to say, hey, you know what, after Briere had scored in double OT, I believe it was, against Robert Ash,
Campbells,
right? Game 1 was... I remember, Duffer, I'll tell you a quick story. So we played the last game of the season, and when we got to the airport and got on the plane, we played in Carolina, I believe, last game of the season. I think I had a 4-0 shutout that game. Anyway, just to kind of point that out, we got on the plane. We thought we were playing the New York Rangers. We were all excited. I remember talking with Jay McKee, and we're like, oh, let's go. Like, we wanted to go visit a few museums. Like, what are we going to do on the off day in Manhattan? When we landed, we found out, oh, we're playing the Flyers. And all of a sudden, we're like, oh, no. Like, the Flyers are big. The Flyers are a team that playing 7 games in a series against them, it's going to be really hard. And game 1, we get that goal by Briere in double OT. And then game 2 was the double hat tricks. And I'm like, oh, like, whew, we can breathe a little bit now. Yes, we went to Philly and lost game 3 and 4, but at least we had the feeling that we can win the series, because you don't often see a team being hesitant or being like, oh, shoot, we went from playing the Rangers to playing the Flyers. Still won. It was great, but that's what the Flyers' intimidation factor was, and being that we won the first 2 games and the dual hat trick was really good for us, worked out.
Do you remember your lopsided win against the Bruins 7-1 back on January 30th of 2007?
No, I don't. I saw that our group text was going today, and I'm like, I don't remember that game at all.
All right. Well, I would click on details, but my screen froze for a little bit, but it started with Vanek and Drury, and then Briere, Gostad, Pominville, Briere. So, yeah.
Well,
Nice 7-1 win. Tidy victory for you.
Nice 7-1 win. I probably didn't have to make too many saves. And that was obviously the year where I got traded. So that was, you know, just a great season. President's Trophy season. We had the offense going. It was, as a goaltender, I mean, I remember, Duffer, I told you, that's the year I wore the white mask all year long. Why? Because we got a mask painted and it didn't fit. And the two games I wore that mask, we won 6-5 and 5-4. I think I gave up like 9 goals in 2 games because the mask was too tight and I couldn't really see well. But we still won, like, because we would outscore my mistakes. So that was a good thing.
Yeah, well, this being late January in 07, obviously was very soon before your deal, right?
Yeah, because the trade deadline was probably a week or two away. Yeah, and then I got beat up by Ray Emery, and then I got traded. So they're like, yeah, he's no tough. Let's get rid of him.
So last night allows the opportunity for, you know, hopefully a successful homestand. We got Razors big night on Friday.
Yes.
Followed by games against New Jersey and Columbus. Any final thought here on the Sabres? There's a lot to get to around the NHL, including some repurposing or rephrasing on my part. I thought I didn't do a very good job discussing the Rantanen deal with you yesterday. So I'd like to kind of revisit that a little more. There's also a new hottest team in the NHL. Shayna won't admit it, but it's the Islanders. They've won 5 in a row. And there's obviously some really tough injuries around the league as well. But real quick on the Sabres, just, you know, what you kind of expect here on the homestand moving forward, Nashville, New Jersey, Columbus, the next 3.
Look, I want them to keep going. Look, I know the Sabres are, I don't want to even like say the amount of points they're out right now of a wild card spot. And a lot of people are saying you're a dreamer to think that it's still a possibility. Okay, yesterday you saw Boston lose. You saw Tampa lose to Chicago. You saw Montreal lose. The Islanders, the only team that won. And you're looking at it saying, could you get maybe 3 points, 4 points closer to a playoff spot before the Four Nations face-off, and then you're only potentially 6 or 7 points out? Like 6 or 7 points out. Like that could be done in 3 weeks to a month, right? I want to still believe that there is a way to get there. I know there's a ton of teams in between the Sabres and that second wild card spot, but there's a way to get there, especially because teams are middling. So much middling in the middle there that I think it's important for everybody to get it done.
5-game win streak for the Islanders has them 4 points out of a playoff spot, but only 5 points behind Boston with 3 games in hand. So they have navigated some really difficult injuries, are still in the middle of that, but their acquisitions on the blue line in front of really the only goalie they have now in Sorokin. Thank goodness for them that he's the guy, but they have injuries in that position too. So last night they rolled Colorado. 5-2 was the final. More on the Avalanche coming up here, but
Duffer, just quickly,
yeah.
Because I was, as we're talking, I'm trying to multitask and I was trying to figure out a way, because I knew last week I did it on JJ Paterka and his goals and assists totals this year when on the ice with Tage Thompson. It's very easy. JJ has 14 goals, 25 assists, 39 points. 11 of his goals have come with Tage Thompson on the ice. 11 of his 14 goals have come with Tage on the ice. 27 of his 39 points have come with Tage Thompson on the ice. And he's only played about half the season in minutes with Tage. Mm-hmm. He's played just over 400 minutes with Tage. He's played over 300 minutes with Cousins. So, you know, like, it's not like 90% of your time is being spent with Tage Thompson and only 2/3 of your points. It's, you know, maybe 60-40 time with Tage this year, but his production is 75-80% and more when you look at the goals, 11 out of 14 with Tage on the ice.
Okay, so that maybe begs the question or the statement, obviously not everybody gets to play with Tage. So how do you get a higher shooting percentage from the rest of your top 6, your top 9, and or do they need to go after someone like Elias Pettersson or JT Miller?
Yeah, I knew that's where you were going to go because
you did. I didn't know until 3 seconds ago.
Well, I figured as you were kind of going through your process that that's where you were going to go.
My check down. You were doing check downs
again. The way that I would build it, right, is I want two lines that can go out there and score consistently in games. I don't see right now the Sabres have that formula being employed because I think the roster needs another added person there. But if you had a centerman that brings in more offense, like Dylan Cousins is a really good player, but I don't see the offense being, even though he made a fantastic play to Thompson, right, for that one timer yesterday, I don't see him driving the bus with the offense on the line. So could that unlock Jack Quinn and Alex Tuch having maybe another centerman there that could do it? And then Cousins and Zucker could be your third line guys that can potentially be that shutdown line. I think that's valid question. If there's a center that you can target to say, hey, we're going to add the offense, and not only that player is going to bring his own offense, but it's going to unlock Tuch creating more offense right now because Tuck's not playing with Thompson, and we don't see the offense as much with Alex Tuch as well. There needs to be just an added piece there to be able to unlock more offense from others.
So is Pettersson a good place to be looking for Buffalo or anyone?
I told you probably 2 months ago the Elias Pettersson trade or imminent trade or situation intrigues me because I think Elias Pettersson's a fantastic hockey player. I think he can provide you with, I know he got over 100 points and maybe that's pushing, but can he provide you with 80 to 90 points regularly? Yes, I think he can do that. Can he get you 35 goals, 40 goals regularly? Yes, I think he can do that. And I think he's a really good playmaker and has the vision. So I think you're obviously going to have more production around him from players right now that are not getting you that production.
Well, what is all the talk doing to the reputation and value of both Pettersson and Miller right now?
What it's doing is it's bringing a lot of people out of the weeds talking about, you know, more negative on both of the players than positives, because there's been so much negative being put out there. Even Jim Rutherford, the president of hockey operations with the Canucks.
Honest mistake.
Because he was kind of, but anyway, he's out there saying, yeah, you know what? It's affecting everybody. We got a little boost out of it because it was a couple of games where Miller and Pettersson were flying. It's almost like they wanted to prove to the rest of the world, no, everything's fine. And then whoop, it's come back down again. Like it's, you can't always kind of like sweep it under the rug. And I think that's what they were trying to do. And is it negative for Miller? Yeah, it's negative for Miller. Is it negative for Pettersson? Yeah, it's negative for Pettersson. But you got to understand that this is a unique situation now where the Canucks, every week it changes. 1 week it's Miller's getting traded. 1 week it's Pettersson's getting traded. 1 week it's both of them will be traded. Like, it's insane right now that is going on. It's a soap opera, and we all know soap operas are fictional. So I'm saying, like, everything that's happening in Vancouver to me is a little bit more fictional, because if you brought in Pettersson or Miller, I think he would just get so much more out of them.
Do you think they'll trade both?
No, but I mean, if you don't get what you, I think the player they want to trade is JT Miller. But I don't know that they are going to get what they want or that JT Miller will approve the trade. So then they pivot to Elias Pettersson because his no move clause doesn't kick in until July 1. So now, you know, you're trying to get the best deal out of it. I don't think they would trade both, but I think they're calling and taking calls on both. They're doing two things at once right now. They're not focusing on trading Miller or trading Pettersson. They're focusing on trying to get offers for both of them, which is, it's hard enough to trade one player. Right now, they're trying to value or evaluate what two players and what the deals are potentially out there. Like, it's not easy.
You're a lot younger than some of the general managers in the game.
I'm older than you, though.
Some days. Only because of my juvenile nature. You know, obviously I still listen and go to Blink 182 shows, so pretty much sums it up right there. No, and but part of me still thinks, like, down the road you're going to be in a hockey executive role.
Oh.
So I ask you, without, like, don't try to look through the lens as if you are Alvin or Rutherford or even Kevin Adams here or another GM there. If you were the general manager in this incredibly challenging situation, what would you follow most before making a move? Your years and years of you personally watching these players and knowing what they can do, relying on whoever you trust to be your sources within a room to understand the dynamic, the potential friction, who's right, who's wrong. Do you put it all on your hockey scouting staff that you presumably have entrusted in all these roles, maybe for a number of years? Like, and I know the easy answer is all of it, but I don't think that's all. Like, I think when push comes to shove on something like this, whether it's one of them or both of them and they move or they don't, like, I think it falls on whoever's, like, the GM, and it's going to come right down to whatever is in their heart.
I was going to say, you are going to get information from everybody, but this is a high, high, high priority, high intensity, high emotional situation that at the end of the day, you, the GM, are the one that's going to wear it. The scouting department's not going to wear it. The coaching staff's not going to wear it as much. Maybe they'll wear it a little bit, but the GM's the one that's going to wear it. And so I ask myself, you know, I've had great GMs in all the teams that I've gone with, from starting with John Muckler, then it was Darcy Regier, and people in Buffalo may think whatever they want out of Darcy Regier and what happened with Drury and Briere and whatever. But look at the teams and the trades and the development that he worked on and the success that he got, right? And the longevity and all of that. Going from there to Paul Holmgren, to Glenn Sater, to, like, I've had, you know, GMs that have had tons of experience, new GMs, whatnot. I almost feel like this comes down to you're the GM, you sit down at your desk and you do what you want to do, not what everybody else is telling you to do, because you're the one that's going to be wearing it. I get it. You have to be taking in the pulse and the information of everybody and get, you know, you probably talk to your ownership group in Vancouver and say, you know, how you feel. But at the end of the day, it's your move. And I hate to say it, I don't want to sound selfish here, but I'm the one that's going to be going to the gas station and grocery store and walking around the building, and people are going to be throwing tomatoes at me or going to throw flowers at me, right? That's what it comes down to at the end of the day.
Make a good trade, then maybe they'll put together a nice pin set for you to commemorate your run as general manager.
Hall of Fame of, like, that day when you traded that person.
Razor's got that honor and many more coming his way on Friday. Obviously, we're looking forward to seeing everyone in attendance. First 10,000 get this beautiful pin set that we've got crafted for this induction. Rob Ray into the Sabres Hall of Fame. Doors open at 5. Ceremony begins at 6:05. We'll have Nashville in town to face the Sabres. Obviously, head to sabres.com for all your information and sabres.com/tickets. And can't wait to see you in the building on Friday for game 2 of the homestand. There is a ton to get to around the NHL, including a distinct loser in the Colorado-Carolina trade. Stay with us.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres are off today. They're back at it for Rob Ray night on Friday with Nashville coming in. The Amerks are kicking off 3-4 nights tonight at home against Utica. They also have a live auction going right now for these incredible jerseys. Marty, I don't think there's a team in sports that has done jerseys better than the Amerks. Their traditional uniform is absolutely elite. Their specialty jerseys, which usually number between 6 and 8 on any given season, are amazing. This latest one is Rock the Riverway Night. It's presented by the American Diabetes Association. The auction is live for the next couple of days, and it is also a stunner. And if I was to give you one guess as to which player's jersey is leading the auction right now, which player do you think that would be?
Devin Levi.
Yes, by a landslide. Look at you, man. What, are you on Jeopardy
my
next?
My trivia has been like, last night I went 6 for 6 on the hat trick trivia. Now I'm 1 for 1. I feel like I have been, it probably all started with the hot dog. Again, hot dog of the day yesterday fueled me for at least 24 hours.
Go to Amerks.com, check out the jerseys, and bid, support. But most importantly, take in the Amerks here. 3 of the next 4 days, they're in action. They're home tonight against Utica. They're hosting Syracuse on Friday. They're at Syracuse on Saturday. Then the trio, Levi,
yep,
Roseanne, and Murray have to jet across the country, take part in the skills competition in Coachella Valley on Sunday night, play in the All-Star Classic on Monday. Thankfully, the Amerks don't play till Friday after that, so they can get back and, you know, have
I hope their travel is better than Kulik and Roseanne yet last year, mm-hmm, who did not get – it was San Jose, right? Barracuda. So they got there. Their equipment didn't get there. They missed everything the first day. And also, can I tell you a quick little story about my experience at the AHL All-Star Classic in 1999? Mm-hmm. So it's in Philadelphia. Like, isn't there an easier travel than to go from Buffalo to Philly, a direct flight that is like probably 8 of them a day, right? Especially back in those days when what was it? US Airways was doing the shuttle between Buffalo and Philly or whatever. I don't know. But anyway, the AHL decided to book me on a flight to Wilmington, Delaware, and then get in a van to go from Wilmington to Philly. So I get that trip, right? Why not Philly? But anyway, I get in. Everything is fine. We have our fun. We're good. Then on my way back, our taxi driver could not find the Wilmington airport. So we ended up in this like side little private airport. They're like, what are you guys doing here? We've ended up finding the airport. We missed our flight. We ended up having to drive back to Philly, to the airport in Philly, get on a flight in Philly so we can, just a disaster of travel, right? Like you're thinking, I could have probably Ubered. There was no Uber back in 99, but from Philly to Buffalo in less time. I put in like 6 hours in a van just to go from Buffalo to Wilmington, drive around, come back to Philly, and then fly back to Buffalo. It was awful.
So how was your experience?
I think I have it on tape too, because I just gotten one of those video camera and I was like documenting the whole thing. So like this poor cab driver, we felt like we were in the Twilight Zone. Like he stopped on the side of the highway on the left side, not the right side, the right shoulder, on the left shoulder to ask for directions. And it was just a disaster. I have all of this documented on video somewhere.
Oh, the MB-40.
I thought we were going to die. I thought we were either going to get kidnapped, get like in an accident, or literally die.
Unreal. The MB-43 Chronicles coming to Netflix at some point within the next 10 years. What are you holding out for? How big a payday do you need for this?
For what?
For your work to appear on Netflix. How much do you need to get paid by Netflix to have this exclusive behind-the-scenes content shown to the world?
So I think that it's more about how much they want me to pay and what I'm willing to go for them to produce it. So that's the problem right now.
Okay. Carolina, Colorado produced the biggest trade in a while. At the end of last week, the biggest loser in the deal has been the New York Rangers. They have lost consecutive games to Colorado and to Carolina with all parties involved getting on the score sheet in some way or another.
Yes.
But in all seriousness, and it is, it's tough for the Rangers, obviously, you know, they were on a really good run. And now, like you described earlier, when looking at the Eastern Conference standings, you lose two games in a row, and all of a sudden you feel like you're one of the middling teams once again, and you're unable to get to that exact spot that you've been chasing for quite some time. However, Carolina and Colorado will remain the talking points moving forward. Mm-hmm. I didn't phrase it very well yesterday when I was trying to put into context Carolina going for Gensel the year before, what he actually accomplished with them, and contrasting his production, regular season, but more importantly, postseason career-wise, with that of Mikko Rantanen. Gensel has actually scored at a higher rate of goal scoring in the playoffs than Rantanen. But Rantanen, of course, is a perennial 100-point player, which Gensel is not, and Rantanen has produced at exactly that 100-point level in his postseason career. Mm-hmm. So it was a no-brainer for you to answer, well, like, Rantanen's the better player. But what's different is that Gensel's career was crafted by not being a 1 or 1A on the team he was with. Maybe Rantanen, same thing. People look at McKinnon, they look at McCarr.
Landeskog,
Beers. Are we now looking at Rantanen differently? And does he assume the spotlight, even though the team still has Aho and others, does Rantanen become the talking point on this Carolina team? And because that would mark the first time in his career that he's faced that spotlight, do you think he'll be able to match the production that he's had in his career?
Yeah, I think he'll match the production, but okay. I think Carolina is the type of team that they don't really have players. Well, in a way, they don't have players to take the spotlight, even though we see Svechnikov with the lacrosse goal and all of that, but it's not about that, right? It's about the team and how you play as a team, how you suffocate the New York Rangers yesterday, and Freddie Anderson gets a shutout, and you're like, okay, do they have the goaltending in Carolina? But when you play like that, yeah, you're going to have the goaltending because your goalie is going to make a couple of saves a game and it works. And Rantanen, for me, fits that persona so well. Like, he can perform at a high level, but he's never going to say, look at me. Like, watch me perform. And I'm not saying that's a negative, but Nathan McKinnon is, look at me. Cale Makar is, look at me. There's players like that in the league that are, look at me, and Rantanen is not. And Rantanen fits that persona in Carolina with Aho and Svechnikov and others that is more like, hey, we'll get our job done, we'll produce, and you know, at the end, you'll talk about the team. So I think that works. And maybe that's why Marty Natchez was always thought of the player that was going to be moved in the summertime and is the player that got moved now because, well, through his dad, given an interview, was basically saying, he doesn't get power play. He doesn't get this. It was more, look at me. Look at me did not fit in Carolina, and Rantanen is not a look at me type of guy, even though he'll continue to perform.
You know what's changed for me since the trade?
Taylor Hall?
No. I don't think Rantanen's going to stay in Carolina.
Yeah, there has been more people that are saying it's not going to be a long-term partnership. I believe it is. I believe Carolina understands that what money is coming off the books and what money they can give me.
I don't think it's going to matter, the money.
Yeah, but I
think he's going to go to a huge market. You need to tell me which one he's going to.
I need to tell you right now?
Well, I mean, I would love for you to tell me right now, but I mean, is it the Rangers? Is it Chicago? Is it insert team name here?
Those like, were the first two teams I thought of, but then my thinking is, how much does Mikko Rantanen like to win? And I'm not saying that the Rangers are not a team that will win. I think the Rangers would probably like a Mikko Rantanen to come in and give him, you know, the performances that he's done. I don't see Chicago being that team next year and the year after to be like, I think Chicago is a mess. I think Chicago is an absolute mess. And I think we're going to be talking about Connor Bedard for 4 or 5 years. And when is Chicago going to be getting it right? I think Chicago is going to take a while.
Any other teams?
Oh, off the top of my head, could Minnesota be a team that would get in there because they're losing all that Parise and Suter money next year? I know they have other players that they have to consider, but if a player like, you know, Mikko Rantanen is available, can you imagine Rantanen and Kirill Kaprizov and, you know, Marco Rossi and those guys? Like, I think Minnesota would be a team that could make a splash in there. I think Bill Guerin is aggressive. I think Bill Guerin is a no-nonsense type of guy, and if he sees an opportunity, he'd go get it. So I think that would be one. Montreal could be another. A team like Montreal saying, hey, they've got Caulfield and Suzuki, but can they part ways with Kirby Dach? And can they say, hey, a Mikko Rantanen player would fit really good in that structure there?
I'll give you one.
Yeah.
Dallas.
Yeah. I like those. Again, like, I don't know the player enough to say, what does he want? Like,
They have over $15 million like alone that. Coming off the books in Ben, Duchesne, Dadonov. Like, it's too easy. Cap going up.
Yeah. I can see that. I can obviously see teams that want to make a splash. Look, I can see Tampa Bay saying, you know what? Let's try to move some money around. Let's try to get a Mikko Rantanen. Right now, Tampa is not a good team. Mm. Tampa has Kucherov is a good player. They have Braden Point who's a good player. They have Hagel that's playing well, but they're not a good team. And they just lost to Chicago. I see that they need to bring in more to help them move forward. Unfortunately, they won so much that they had to pay a lot of players a lot of money and give them no movement clause and all of that. But I can see Tampa, a team that's saying, look, Florida is down the road and Florida won the cup and we need to get back there. Let's make a move.
What do you make of the Haskinen injury last night sustained at the hands of Mark Stone in Vegas?
I think it was an unfortunate incident. People are saying Mark Stone threw himself into the legs of Miro Heiskanen and that was a dirty play. I don't see it that way. I see a stick of Roope Hintz that kind of taps the toe, the left toe of Mark Stone. Looks like he's toe-picking, wants to make a play on the puck as the body's going forward and you're losing your balance and you're toe-picking and you're falling forward. You're still trying to get your stick on the puck and he unfortunately got tangled up with Miro Heiskanen's leg. Like, nobody, there's not one NHL hockey player that would think this is the way to go after a defenseman. Tackle them into the legs. That was just a toe pick and an unfortunate incident. I don't see much more than that.
Brutal. Either way, we'll await an update on Heiskanen, and it could be devastating for Dallas, a team that ended up winning last night thanks to a Wyatt Johnston hat trick, including the overtime winner against Vegas, a Vegas team that has now lost 8 of the last 11. New Jersey has lost 10 of 14. He sure is out week to week. What do the Devils do as we get closer to the trade deadline? And do you think that the trade deadline is actually not going to be the deadline this year because idle hands of general managers with no players of their own to watch during the Four Nations frenzy. Don't you anticipate there being a bunch of trades in February? Because
I'm thinking like everybody's going to do their homework during the Four Nations face-off.
Forget and then the homework. When you submit it. Like, I mean, wouldn't
well,
you,
I don't know if, that. I think the week after, I think the first week. So the Sabres, for example, come back. Their last game is on February the 8th, and then they come back on February the 22nd. That's 2 weeks. I think everybody's going to have their scenarios done for 2 weeks. Players come back, and then the last week of February, you could see a lot of fireworks a week before the trade deadline.
Well, I would say this. Wouldn't it make more sense to acquire someone when no one's playing, allow them family time to get things settled, travel without haste, and get settled in a new city and come out of the break having practiced, having been with your new team? To me, that makes sense. And for some teams, every game it's critical when it comes to the standings. So why not give yourself a best chance? But hey, that's just me.
It does make sense. I just think that a lot of teams' personnel are either going to be scouting and being on the road. Like, you may wait until everybody comes back, get together, and explore all the options that are on the table.
Well, the other thing is, always cap consideration and the actual days that you have to pay somebody.
Yeah.
And so that's why with a deadline in place, you can
teams
project.
Would want to trade players so they can right. get them off their caps, but the teams acquiring them may have to wait.
Yeah. Busy week in at KeyBank Center, and it got off on the right foot last night with a lopsided Buffalo win over Boston. We'll talk more about that when we come back on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Four Sabres games in 8 days at home this week, and Tucker Out Lymphoma Night on Saturday for the Bandits. It is the most special night on the calendar, which is saying something when you consider what Bandit Land has been and is once again as two-time defending champions. But there's nothing like it. Can't wait to see you in Bandit Land. It's February 1st, this Saturday, 7:30, as we honor the life legacy of Tucker Williams. And it's not just a Buffalo Bandits thing. This has become such a national lacrosse league venture, Marty, that, yeah. man, this Bandits organization has so much to be proud of. And this is absolutely one of their highlight nights.
Great jerseys, and they always have different jerseys for those nights. So great jerseys for the Bandits. And so many people came up to you last night, Duffer, in the 300 level, talking about Bandit Land and being at the games and all of that. So that was that's always fun to see.
Yeah, it's never, I mean, it's just we're so, so, so happy to have the opportunity to interact with people, whether we're in our typical 200 level location or last night, the 300 level. And happy birthday to Mike Foligno.
Mike Foligno, Andre Reed, a lot of Buffalo legends here. But I want to say happy birthday to Tom Selleck, just because off the air in the commercial, we kind of, he's 80 years old, by the way, Tom Selleck, the great mustache is 80 years old. Uh-huh. But, you know, Tom Selleck's probably known from Magnum P.I. Most, you know,
that was a long best time character. Ago.
That was a long time ago. And then I asked all of you guys, what's the second role that he's probably best known for? And I thought Richards in Friends. He was Monica's boyfriend, but I don't know. I like Mr. Baseball, too. So that's my Tom Selleck reference.
You're such a Friends guy. That was a natural yes. choice for you. We've got lots to get to again tomorrow. We'll see you then on Sabres Live.